sort of a continuation of the previous lecture, so it should be one lecture. But last time we took some time in just going back into the introduction of the modalities that can be utilized in the medical imaging in trying to evaluate the patient, whether it is in regard to the musculoskeletal or any other parts of the body. We said that there are several modalities which can be utilized in imaging the patient or investigating the patient. And we talked about the differences between the, these modalities. And in regard to the musculoskeletal system, in particular trauma, we have highlighted some of the importance of certain modalities, such as the ultrasound. And we said the ultrasound is usually meant to evaluate what?
Soft tissue.
The soft tissue component of the musculoskeletal system, including the ligament, muscles, tendon, and the capsule, the joint capsule. In particular, if there is a fusion, joint fusion fluid within the joint. Okay? And in comparison between CT scan, computed tomography, and MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, we said that the MRI is usually utilized to evaluate areas which has an abundant hydrogen atoms. We said that the MRI depends on the hydrogen atom in producing the signal. So the areas which has abundant hydrogen atoms in regard to the musculoskeletal system is what?
Brain, the nervous system. CNS.
In regard to the musculoskeletal,
musculoskeletal
component. Again, the soft tissue,
muscles,
the muscles,
tendons,
ligaments, and
bone marrow.
The bone marrow. So what's important in regard to the musculoskeletal system is the bone marrow and the soft tissue structures. We cannot evaluate the bone cortex, the condensed bone, because there's no much of
hydrogen
in, the, in these areas. And CT scan will be better in evaluating the bone cortex as compared to the bone marrow. And the importance of the MRI is it can highlight the changes, the early changes that can occur within the bone marrow. Therefore, the best area to be evaluated in regard to the best area to be evaluated by MRI is the early changes within the bone marrow itself. Remember that this lecture and the previous one will be included in your continuous assessment, the coming assessment. And what's important is what I'm just giving you in the lecture. So if you attend and carefully listen, I'm sure that you will answer all the questions that are related to the trauma, musculoskeletal trauma. Now, interpretation, we said that interpretation means what? Analysis of the findings that can be seen on the X-ray. And we give an example of the two pictures and picking up the differences. And we said, what's the difference between this example and the X-ray? Just to highlight the importance of the normal anatomy that can be built in your mind by looking at several X-ray. And second, by having an order or a system in analyzing the findings that can be seen on the X-ray. Later on, we talked about some of the terminology that can be seen, which can be related to the musculoskeletal system, in particular dislocation, subluxation, and other terms. And we discussed the differences between these terms, for example, and we mentioned some of the injuries which are usually related to the pediatric age group, and we will see examples later on. Now, in regard to the tubular bone, what's the difference between the pediatric and the adult X-ray of the
cartilage
in regard to the tubular bone? Is that the pediatric, there is what we call the growth plate, the physial plate, or the area where there is still a place for growing of the bone in the longitudinal axis. Why? Because this area is not yet ossified. There is no mineralization of this area. It's still cartilaginous, therefore it can grow more. In the adult, at the age of the puberty, this will be closed, and therefore there will be no room for more growing of the long axis of the tubular bone. And what's important is to outline the compartments or the parts of the long tubular bone. The shaft is usually called the diaphysis. The end of the bone is called, the yellow area is the metaphysis. And the oval shape or rounded shape structure is the epiphyseal centers. And in between, the black area is usually referred to the growth plate or physial plate. Now, what's the importance in these areas is that in some disease entity or pathology, this area can be disrupted, just as in the trauma. You might have a fracture or injury into the growth plate, in which it can lead to separation, widening, or what we call it, diastasis of the growth plate. Or other disease entities, such in this example, where you could see that there is widening of the growth plate, the physial plate here, associated with curving of the metaphysis. See the outline of the metaphysis here, and see the outline here, it appeared irregular and curved, as you see in the drawing. It is curved, and the outline is irregular. This is usually seen in patients with rickets, metabolic bone disorder. So what we see is widening of the growth plate, and there is irregularity of the metaphysis, which we call it fraying, and then cupping due to the invagination of the cartilage inside the bone, the effect of the cartilage within the bone. I just brought this example just to show you the difference between the tubular bone in the pediatric and adult, and the importance of the growth plate in the pediatric age group. Remember that when we say tubular bones, what are the tubular bones in the body? The upper and lower limb, the humerus, radius ulna, femur, tibia, and fibula. Do we have other tubular bones in the body?
Sternum.
Sternum is a flat bone.
Iliac, maybe.
Iliac is flat bone. So it is not rounded, the tubular, cylindrical. Tubular is a cylindrical type of bones, such as
digits.
Ribs are flat again. They are considered flat bone.
The digits?
The digits in the hand and in the finger. The difference between the hand and feet with the limbs is that the tubular bone here are short, while in the limbs they are long. So we call it long tubular bone and short tubular bones. Now, there are certain important concepts in regard imaging of a patient with musculoskeletal trauma. These concepts are summarized here. Two perpendicular views. Radiograph should include the joint nearest to the trauma, the paired bone concept, the weakest link concept, and comparison film. Let's talk about the two perpendicular views. What do we mean by two perpendicular views?
Posterior, lateral. Lateral view and posterior.
Lateral view and frontal AB view. So this is two perpendicular views. One is AB and the second is lateral. Why it's important to have two views?
Some fractures doesn't appear in PS.
Because the fracture might be not clearly visualized on one of the views, it will be seen on the second. Now, to see a fracture on the X-ray, it should be perpendicular to the plane of the X-ray. It should be at right angle. If it is in phase, parallel, it will not be seen. So to see the fracture, it's always important to have a view that is perpendicular to the plane of the fractures. Not only that, some of the other associated abnormalities might not be seen in one of the projections and clearly seen on the second. And let's see examples of this. This is a patient with a trauma to the fingers. If we look at the fingers, these are the short tubular bones. We could see the proximal, middle, and distal phalanges of the finger, and the black line in between is what?
Joint.
The joint. Okay? So we could clearly see the joints in the proximal and distal interphalangeal articulation. Again, you could see the joint here and the joint here. Let's look at the middle finger. Do you see the joint in the proximal?
No.
So we lost the joint, which indicates what?
Dislocation.
That there is some degree of dislocation or subluxation. The two bones are overlapped over each other, and we lost the joint in between. If we look at the lateral confirmed the presence of the dislocation. Can you see the overlap of the two bones? But what the lateral add is that the fracture, which is seen at the base of the middle phalanx, was not seen on the frontal projection. So this is one of the importance of the two different views. Another example is this patient. This is a patient with a trauma to the elbow joint. So this is the x-ray of the elbow. This is the right, this is the left. Just to remind you with the anatomy of the distal part of the humerus, again, this is the shaft, this is the medial aspect, and this is the lateral aspect. On the medial aspect, just above the level of the articular surface, we have what we call the eminence of the humerus, the medial eminence, which is the medial epicondyle. Remember that the articular bony compartment of the distal humerus, it's called the condyles. The medial one is the trochlea, and the lateral one is the capitellum. Above the trochlea, we have the eminence, which we call it the medial epicondyle, which is more prominent than the lateral one. Distally, we have both the ulna articulating with the trochlea and the radial head articulating with the capitellum. Which is wider, the ulna or the radius?
Ulna.
The ulna. So the radial head is narrower or smaller than the ulna in the proximal portion. And you could see clearly the joint in between the two bones. Clear? Now compare, this is the normal side with the abnormal side. What you could see? Dislocation. We lost the joint and the articulation between the ulna and radius with the humerus. Now let's look at the lateral. Does it help or does it give more information? Yes, we could see the dislocation more clear. We could see that the humeral head is anteriorly displaced while the radius and ulna are posteriorly and superiorly placed. And we lost the articulation with the ulna, or what you call it, the olecranon process. In the ulna, this is the olecranon process, and this is the coronoid process. We have two processes in the articular surface of the ulna, or what you call it, the peaks. The large one is the olecranon, and the small one is the coronoid. Now, coming to this example, this is a child with a trauma. And why I said child? Because you could see that still the epiphyseal center not yet fused. In the lat and the frontal projection, do you see any fracture?
No.
Why is it
Because we could see that this is the epiphyseal center and this is the growth plate. So you should not mistake this for a fracture. Now one will ask me, where is the epiphyseal center of the radius? The epiphyseal center of each bone will have a certain time to appear, certain age. So this is still yet not ossified, not clearly visualized. So usually the radial head, for example, occur at the age of 5 years. So this should be below the, this is less than 5 years. An example, for example. But the epiphyseal center of the olecranon process or the epithelium will appear more earlier, and this is the reason we see it here. Now, what I could say that in the frontal projection I could not see any clear fracture, while on the lateral I could see that there is sharp line disrupting the cortex anteriorly and crossing inside the distal humerus, indicating that there is a fracture which is not seen on the frontal projection. So this is the importance of the two perpendicular views. Now we have what we call it the bird horn concept. What do you think? What do we mean by bird horn? Bird means twin, two. Do we have two bones, long tubular bones in the body?
Yeah. You know.
Where?
In the ulnar.
In the forearm, the radius and ulna.
Tibia and fibula.
And in the leg, tibia and fibula. So let's look at the forearm. We have two bones, and these two bones are fixed distally and proximally by what?
Ligaments.
By the joint. We have the wrist joint and we have
elbow.
The elbow joint. So the length of both is almost identical because of the fixation, right? So what do you think? If you have one of the two bones fractured and there is associated angulation of the fracture, what will happen to this bone?
Short.
It will become shorter. But we said that the two bones are fixed in their lengths by the distal and proximal articulation. So if this one is shortened, what should happen to the second one? Pulled or fractured, or to compensate for the shortening. It can be both fractured or
dislocate.
It can dislocate from either distal or proximal. So this is what we mean by the concept. Whenever you have a patient with a trauma to the forearm, with a fracture of one of the two bones, one should look carefully on the second for either bowing, fracture, or
dislocation.
Now, since we are talking about this, it's always also important to include the joint on the x-ray whenever you have a fracture. Let's look at this patient. This is the forearm, this is the ulna radius, and there is fracture with angulation of the ulna, right? You could see the fracture. Now, do you see the proximal joint here? Is it included on the x-ray? So can we evaluate if there is any dislocation of the radius or not? Let's look at the repeated x-ray of this patient where the joint is clearly included, and we could see that the radius is totally away from the articulation of the capitulum, which indicates that the compensation of the angulation here or the shortening of the ulna is by dislocation of the proximal radius. So this is the importance of the concept of the two bones in one certain anatomical location. Now, the weakest link point. The weakest link point. And I think this is important. Why? Because this is an important in the practical practice and in the exam. Now, what do we mean by the weakest link point? The weakest link point usually refers to the most common injury occurring within the musculoskeletal component, whether it is in adult or in the pediatric age group. The most common area that is likely to be involved in the trauma in the adult age group is the soft tissue component. If you have a football player, do you think that they will come with a fracture or meniscal and ligamental injury?
Meniscal.
Usually they come with a sprain or a meniscal injury, cartilage injury. So they are more liable to have soft tissue fracture injuries rather than bone.
Fracture.
While in the pediatric, the bone are still fragile. so they can easily fracture. Therefore, the bone is more liable to be injured in the pediatric as compared to the adult. And within the bone, in particular, which area is the more likely to be injured? The mesial plate or the growth plate, because it is not yet ossified. There is no yet mineralization of this cartilage. Now, remember that we talked about the CT and MRI in imaging patient with trauma. And we said that the importance of the CT and MRI is to highlight or delineate the pathology more clear in a more detailed sequence, and also evaluating the surrounding structures. So the just picking up the pathology, it can be seen by the conventional X-ray, the simple X-ray, but delineating the anatomy and the details of the pathology will be done by the CT and MRI. This example is just to highlight the importance of the CT. It's not for you to know the pathology or know the abnormality. This is a patient who complained of ankle joint pain. The X-ray, if you look carefully at the X-ray, you could not pick any abnormality. But this is the lateral projection. This is the tibia, fibula. This is the talus bone, calcaneum, navicular, and this is part of the tarsal bones. In the frontal projection, tibia, fibula. This is the talus. This is the joint in between. Now, in the CT, what we do is axial cut, so you will not see the bone like this. You see it as a rounded structure. So if we look at the CT scan, this is at the level of the joint itself. This is the
fibula tibia.
The joint or the articular portion of the ankle joint. This is the dome of the talus, the upper surface of the talus bone. This is the lateral, this is the median and the lateral aspect of the malleoli. This is the fibula, the distal portion of the fibula, and this is the distal portion of the tibia. Now, if you look carefully, you can see that there are rounded areas with white, with a sclerotic margin. This is a lytic lesion with a sclerotic margin along the surface of the talus bone, which is not seen on the left side. If we come back into the plain film, it's not that much clear. If we look at the frontal, we could not pick up the abnormality. So the importance of the CT can delineate the pathology which is not clearly seen on the plain film. If we look at the lateral, one would say that this is the surface, and if you look here, we could see that there is some sclerosis. This sclerosis is not clear. On the CT scan, it became more obvious. This is the MRI, where you could see that the pathology, this lytic area, is more clearly seen along the superior surface of the talus. This is the tibia, and this is the calcaneum. Now, injuries which are related to the pediatric age group, what do you think? What are the injuries that are related to the pediatric age group?
Fractures, dislocations.
Fractures, where? Fractures where? Fesial plate. Remember, we said that the most weak area in the bones is the fesial plate or the growth plate. So injuries that involve this area is one of the injuries that can be seen in the pediatric age group. The second type of injury, remember that when we said the example of the two bones, when one is fractured, the second, what happened to the second? It can be bowed. Bowing will not occur in the adult. Why? Because the bone is consolidated, is dense. While in the pediatric, the bone are still fragile, so they can bend. So one of the fractures or injuries that can occur in the pediatric age group is bowing. Second, injuries that involve the fesial plate or the growth plate. The two other type of injuries are the injuries that can involve the cortex of the bone. Remember that we said that the bone are fragile, not consolidated. I'll bring an example, the tree. If you have a tree, a small tree with branches, what is the color of the branches?
Green.
This is young?
Green.
Green. If you pick up one of the green sticks or branches of the tree and you try to bend it, what will happen?
To bend.
It will bend to a certain level, and then what will happen? Will it fracture totally, separated?
No.
What will happen is that in the surface against the bending force, the fibers of the surface will be disrupted, while the surface which is inside the force of bending, it will remain in contact. So disruption will occur in the opposite surface. So this is called green stick fracture. Fracture that involves one surface while the opposite surface is still intact. So this is the third type of injuries that can occur in the pediatric age group. But let's say that the force of the injury is not a bending force. It is a force which is opposing each other. For example, a child who is jumping from a high, what will happen? He will have the force of the jumping vertically oriented and the rebound which is from down. So this is two opposite factors of the force of the injury. So what will happen to the cortex of the bone? You have a force from up and force from
down.
It will impact or it will bend. We call it buckling of the cortex, bending of the cortex. And this is usually called the torus fracture. Torus fracture is the bending of the fracture, which is usually involving the cortex of the bone. Can you see the localized buckling here? I'll show you a magnified view. This is what we call buckling of the cortex or torus fracture. The second fracture is the fracture that involves one side of the bone while the opposite side is intact, and this is called what?
Green stick
fracture. Now, the third type of injuries is this one where you have one of the two bones is fractured while the second is curved, bowing fracture. Now, the last type of the fracture, we said that the fracture which involves the growth plate, the black area. And this is called physial plate injury or growth plate injury. Now, the person who have picked up this type of injury is called Salter Harris. Therefore, the injury of the physial plate is named as a Salter Harris injury. So this is the name of the persons who describe the changes that occur at the level of the growth plate. Now there are several types of or patterns of injury of the growth plate. Either you will have diastasis because of the pulling, there will be separation of the growth plate, widening, or this widening might be associated with the fracture of the metaphysis, or fracture associated with epiphyseal center, or fracture or separation with an associated both metaphyseal and epiphyseal, or the last one
compression.
Is the impacted force, where you have impaction of the epiphyseal center with the metaphysis. Remember, we said that what's the importance of the growth plate or the physial plate?
Growth,
the growing, the long axis or the longitudinal growing. If you have injury to this area, what will happen? It will disturb the normal process of growing. What do you think? Which is the more likely to involve or to involve the growing?
Five.
Type 5, why? because it's unimpacted, it will lead to premature closure of the growth plate. Now, this is the commonest type which can affect the growth, while type 2 is the commonest among the frequency of occurrence. So type 2 will be seen more frequent, and type 5 is the one which is more likely to affect the growth as compared to the other types. This is a patient with a trauma to the ankle joint. Remember that this is the fibula tibia talus. Is it a child or adult?
Child.
Child, because you can see still the facial plate or the growth plate. Are they symmetrical? You can see that it's more widened and irregular on the right side. If it is widened and irregular, what does it mean? Which type of injury?
Type 1.
Type 1. So this is called type 1 Salter-Harris injury. If you have a patient with widening of the growth plate and part of the metaphysis is separated, a valse here.
Factor.
So this is type 2. Let's look at the third example. Patient with pain of the hand. If we compare the right and the left, we can see that, can you see the length of the finger here and the length of the finger here? So there's shortening of the middle finger on the right side. What do you think? What could be the cause of this?
Type 5.
If we look carefully, can you see the epiphyseal centers here? And look at the, on the one here. This is the oblique view. This has been impacted inside the shaft and led to premature closure of the growth plate and therefore disrupted the length of the finger. Now, this is an adult patient who came presented with pain of the right hip joint after being involved in trauma. Just to remember the anatomy, if you want to know the pathology or to pick up the pathology, you need to know the normal outline, normal anatomy. What are these parts?
Lumbar.
This is the lumbar spine, vertebrae. What is this?
Iliac.
The iliac bone, and this is called the iliac wing. Now, in the iliac bone, we have the iliac, the ilium itself, or the iliac wing, and we have two other bony components.
Ischium and pubis.
The pubic ramus and the ischium. So this is called the triradiate type of bone. It has three bones, the iliac, pubic, and ischium. If I ask you, which is anterior, this part of the bone or this part?
Pubic.
The one below is anterior. Why? Because the iliac bone, the two iliac bone will form what? The symphysis pubis, which is anteriorly. While this part is the spine, and the spine is definitely posterior. So this ring, the pelvis, which is seen as rounded, is actually an AP ring. One part is posterior and the other is anterior. The posterior where you could see the spine and the anterior where you could see the articulation between the two pubic bones, the symphysis pubis. Now, we talked about the iliac bone, and this is the joint which is formed by the acetabular fossa. This is the acetabulum and the head of the femur. So if you look at the femur, this is the head of the femur, which is rounded, neck, and this is the shaft. In between the neck and the shaft, we have a large bunch of bone, which is called the greater trochanter, and the small one, which is lesser trochanter. So this is the head, neck, and chair with both trochanteric process. Now, this is the pubic bone and the ischium. You could now outline the whole aspect of the bony component of the pelvic bone. To evaluate the bones for fractures, we have to look at the density and the cortical outline of the bone. So if we look, this is the outer cortical outline of the iliac bone, this is the cortical outline of the femur, and this is the cortical outline of the ischiopubic rami. And this is the inner aspect of the iliac bone. Now, if you go through the cortical outline, do you think that the right and left are symmetrical, or there's any difference? I will give you 1 minute to look at. But I will make it more simple. I will tell you that the outer aspect is symmetrical. There is no obvious disruption. The interior aspect, this is the medial aspect or the interior aspect. Compare this area and this area, are they symmetrical?
Where's
the
iliocecal junction?
The right one, is it continuous or there's disruption? There's a clear disruption in the cortical outline indicating that there is a fracture in the right acetabular or iliac bone extending into the articular surface of this. Can you see the fracture, the sharp line? This is the fracture which is seen on the frontal projection, and this is an oblique projection. Now, this is a fracture which is clearly seen on the plain film. Do you think that CT scan, computed tomography, is needed in this patient?
Yes.
No. Why? The fracture is seen. The orthopedic surgeon asked for CT and he insisted for CT. Why?
Extend.
Now, we said, what's the importance of the CT as compared to the plain film? The fracture is seen on the plain film. The details. What's the importance of the details in this patient?
Extent of the fracture.
Remember that the hip joint and shoulder joint are a complex area. It's not a simple area. You have several bones contributing into the component of the pelvic bone or the hip joint. So what's the importance of the CT scan here? It can delineate the anatomy more clear. This is one. Second, since the fracture is extending into the articular surface, can you see the disruption of the acetabulum here? We need to evaluate the joint. Why? Because sometimes we might have a small piece of bone in regard to the articular region which can separate and displace within the joint and lead to what we call a loose body inside the joint. And the importance of a loose body inside the joint, it can prevent the normal movement of the joint. And therefore, the CT scan is indicated in such patients. This is the axial cuts, and these are the reformatted coronal images. If we look carefully, the fracture is nicely seen on the axial cut and even in the coronal plane. But what's important here is that in this cut, we could see that the fracture line is not a line. It has four bifurcated and lead to a small piece of bone in between the two branches. So this piece of bone can displace, dislodge, and go inside the joint and lead to a loose body in the joint. So it's not important to fix the fracture in the superior aspect here. What's important is not this fracture. The importance is the tiny piece of bone which is related to the articular surface.
Can you see here?
لا CT, remember that when we discussed the modalities, we said that the CT, we cannot perform coronal. It's a ring that the patient go inside this ring. So what it can do is axial cuts, transverse cuts. And we cannot perform coronal. But nowadays, because the CT machines, the equipment has advanced in the way it can do the axial cuts, we can collect the data in the computer and reform or rebuild an image in the coronal plane. So it's not a direct image. This is the computer has built this image. Previously, in the old scanners, we could not perform this coronal. Why? Because the computer at that time was having a slice, then it moved, take another slice, then move. By this movement, there will be gaps. So when you rebuild coronal, you will see the image disrupted by these gaps. You will not see a continuous image in the coronal plane. Now, the relative of that patient said, since my relative complained of pain, I have a pain, let's have a checkup. So they did an X-ray for another patient, not a relative, another patient. But he has the same complaint, right hip pain. Now, let's look at the same area. Is it similar to the previous one or? Remember this disruption. Can you see? Is it sharp or fuzzy, ill-defined?
Sharp.
This is magnified view. Let's look at the second patient.
Fuzzy.
Do you have disruption here as compared to this side? So there's disruption. But the difference between this one and the previous one, it is not sharp like the previous fracture. Let's look at the CT scan. Is it sharp, the fracture? It's hazy, ill-defined. And you can see that there is multiple white areas, as if it is
sclerotic,
permeated, it is distributed, scattered. If we do the CT scan of this patient, this is the bone window, and this is the soft tissue window. In the bone window, we could see that instead of having a fractured line, what we have? Fragmentation. As if it's fragmented, multiple pieces of bone. Is it only fragmentation of the bone? If you look at the soft tissue component here, this is the muscle. And compare this muscle. Is it symmetrical?
No.
There is soft tissue swelling associated with the bone fragmentation. So this makes the fracture here is unusual. This is not the usual fracture that we have seen in the previous example. This is a patient with a bone fragmentation and associated with soft tissue swelling. If we look at the bone here and the bone here, are they symmetrical in the density?
No.
So even the density of the bone is, or the texture of the bone is abnormal. So what we call this type of fracture? Pathological fracture, which occur in an underlying pathological bone, diseased bone. Now, to have a proper or a more clear details of the involvement of the muscle and the bone, what we should do or what we can do? MRI. The CT scan showed us the bone changes and that there is a soft tissue. Let's look at the MRI. This is the MRI image. Now, it's not for you to have the diagnosis from MRI, just to understand the importance, the concept of the importance of the CT scan and MRI in delineating the possible underlying pathology. Now, if you have bone fragmentation, bone, diseased bone, with a soft tissue swelling, this soft tissue swelling could be related to infection or tumor, neoplastic lesion. Now, in infection, I would expect to have a cavity with a pus inside. Usually, the MRI can delineate the presence of the pus and the cavity within the soft tissue component. And as opposed to this, it can also show us that this cavity or this swelling is not pus, it is, for example, blood hematoma. So the MRI, this is the importance of the MRI as compared to the CT scan. It can give us better characterization of the pathology, tissue characterization. And in this example, we did several type of sequences on the MRI, what you call it, several change in the window of the MRI, in which we could say that the soft tissue component is not necrosis, not abscess, it is blood, and therefore the likely cause of this bone disease and fragmentation and fracture is tumor, neoplastic process, such as
osteosarcoma,
for example. This was a case of osteosarcoma. Now, another example of pathological fracture is the bone which has, for example, a cystic area inside the bone. Here, can you see the normal bone in this distal portion? While in the proximal part, the bone expanded, the expansion of the bone, and there is a lucent area. This is cystic
fibrosa
area inside the bone.
Cystic fibrosa.
Now, the reason for the patient the patient presentation was the presence of the fracture. Can you see the fracture of the cortex here? So, the fracture gave the pain, and the pain brought the patient to the medical advice. So this is a patient with a bone cyst associated with fracture.
Nice.
So the cyst within the bone made the bone fragile and can be easily fractured. This is another example. Now, since we said that the underlying bone is diseased, do you think that you need a major force to fracture or a minor
force? Minor force.
So, this is what we call it pathological fracture. Pathological fracture is the occurrence of a fracture with a minor trauma. Is it clear the term? This is an important term. Pathological fracture is the fracture that occurs as a result of a minor trauma to the bone with subsequent fracture. When you do the image, you discover that the bone is diseased or having pathological fracture. Now, the other type of fracture is what we call it the stress fracture. So what's the difference between pathological and stress fracture?
Continuous minor trauma.
Repeated type of minor trauma. So it is not one occasion.
Yeah.
In pathological fracture, one occasion, minor trauma led to the fracture. This is what makes you alert that there should be pathology within the bone. Here, no, the bone is normal, but repeated type of minor trauma to a certain area will lead to the fracture. And we said that the best example is the soldiers with the marsh fracture. This is a soldier with a pain in the forefoot. The first X-ray done showed no clear injury. The follow-up showed, can you see the fracture? I'll just show you a magnified view. This is the initial X-ray, and this is after 1 week. Is it clear, the fracture? Stress fracture is usually very tiny, very hairline. We call it hairline, like the hair. Hairline fracture, which is usually perpendicular to the shaft of the tubular bone. You see, it's oriented in the transverse plane. So this is what we call it, the stress fracture. Is it clear? Salasna word. Just before I end, do you have any question about the lecture?
Yeah.
What's your price?
I don't know.
Torus fracture, we said that the difference between torus fracture and green stick fracture, green stick fracture is usually a bending force which can lead to disruption of the cortex from one side while the opposite side is intact. Torus fracture is that the force is opposing each other, like superior and inferior, when a child is jumping, for example. So what will happen is that an impacted force will come into the fragile fibers of the cortex. So in a certain area near the metaphysis, the cortex will bend, will buckle. And this would be buckling cortex or torus fracture. Just before I leave you, I think the group leaders asked me, what's the exam? The exam is not a picture in this first class. It will be sort of an interview with a single answer. So we call it single best answer. And an example of this, I'll show you one of the questions. And I will divide you into three groups. So group A, B, C. Since group B is the dominant group here, they will answer this question. MRI is best utilized to evaluate which of the following? It will be utilized to evaluate all of the following except one. C, ligament.
E,
compact bone, cortex. Agree, E or C?
E.
E, let's see.
طبعا MRI يستعملون عشان ال
okay.
Anterior cruciate.
Is it clear now the concept of how we perform, construct the question? Now, group A and C will answer the second question. Salter-Harris fractures usually involve which part of the bone?
C.
معناتها سي احسن من A. اوكي. واضحة ال let's take the last example. Group A لأن ما جاوبت كلمة راح اساعدكم فيها.
يعطيكم العافية. هذا المثال حقنا. هذا السؤال حقنا.